Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to visit with you today about a new concept that we've been kind of looking at in Texas that has kind of come about through just some of my interactions with producers across the state, some anecdotal evidence, guys planting, springy-type, winter-type small grains that if we have a mild winter would actually go ahead and head in the winter or in late fall or winter. And kind of brought up some questions as to, is that really a bad thing? Can we actually benefit from that system? And looking to try and integrate it with our winter-type small grains. So forage production with wheat and other small grains is really important in Texas. We graze roughly 50% of the wheat that's grown in Texas, and we grow 2.4 million hectares. It's either number one or number two as far as row crops go in Texas. So it's a big crop, covers a lot of acres. Like I mentioned, most of the small grains grown in Texas are winter type, so we plant them early in the fall to try and maximize fall forage production, and then they're either in a grain system, they can either be used as dual purpose and harvested for grain if cattle are pulled off early enough, or in some cases we just graze the crop out and we don't harvest any grain. With this system though, the wheat remains vegetative all fall. Obviously, our winter types are going to need to vernalize, so they're not going to head until springtime. Contrary to that, we've got spring types of small grains, and they grow according to heat units. They don't need to vernalize. Therefore, they may provide some rapid growth in the fall that we may not see with the winter types. So any of you who have dealt with small grains are aware of this graph showing you typical growth patterns. We have some fall forage production here in the fall. It lags in the wintertime, but we see the vast majority of our production is going to occur in the springtime. Well, what we're thinking with the spring is why don't we just bypass this this period where we have not as much forage production, just go straight to, bypass vernalization, go straight to rapid stem elongation, and we can do that with our spring types because we have enough heat units in the fall. Now, the problem if you go straight with spring types is they're going to head out, and therefore, that's going to be it for your fall, for your forage production in the fall. You're going to remove the growing points, and then there's going to be nothing in the spring. So we propose doing a blend and seeing if we can get the best of both worlds. Some preliminary data we did, we do variety testing across the state. So just to look at it, looking at spring-type barleys, by themselves and how they compare to our other small grain entries. You just focus on the orange bars and the entries that are highlighted in the red rectangles, you'll see all of the spring barleys, which are highlighted in the red rectangles. Those orange bars are fall, the forage production in the fall. They all statistically were in the top group, which are anything that yielded above that red line. So they did very well. So we went ahead with this study, doing different blends and different seeding rates. We did a randomized complete block design. We did four seeding rates, and I apologize, this is actually English units. So it's 50, 75, 100, and 125 pounds per acre. We did three interseeding ratios. We had our controls with just 100% winter wheat. And then we did blends of 25 and 50% with the spring small grain, which in this case was hay bet spring barley. We had three different site years. We did a year in College Station, one in McGregor and one in Comanche. Like I said, we used Haybet spring barley, and then TAM-204 is an onless hard red winter wheat. As far as locations go, like I said, College Station, this is a limited irrigation system, heavy clay soil. McGregor does not have irrigation, receives roughly 75 to 80 centimeters of rainfall a year, also very heavy clay soil. And then we have Comanche, which was an irrigated system, and this was actually a more sandier site, so a little bit different soil type. Just one photo, I don't know how well it shows up, but this is showing you the difference on a winter only on the left versus the blend on the right, and hopefully you can see that there's quite a bit of stem elongation taking place, and I think it shows up in the numbers quite well, the difference in the biomass that we were seeing. So looking at results, this is looking just at fall forage production. So we took a clipping roughly in December. We usually plant the very end of September. This was taken, like I said, early to mid-December at these three locations, and the trends are more or less the same at all of these. There were significant interactions, but the blue line, if you can't read, just to go through the axes, so this is seeding rate on the x-axis going from 50 to 125 pounds per acre. This is forage yield on the y-axis. Blue bar is your control, which is 100% winter wheat. Red bar is the 25% blend with spring barley, and then with the 50-50 blend is the green bar. And the big trend here is the blue line's always at the bottom, red's in the middle, and the green's always at the top. Now, I kind of expected this to happen. This is what we were hoping to see with more biomass production, significantly more. If you look at McGregor here, we're looking at a third of a ton, pretty much across the board, whereas if we're blending, we're looking at either doubling or almost tripling our forage yield in the fall, which is really, really good. Now, the question I had was, what's going to happen in the springtime? Because we're blending these, is the spring going to outcompete the winter? How's the winter going to do in the springtime? So unfortunately, we did lose one location due to excessive rainfall. We weren't able to harvest, get the machine physically in the field. So we only have two locations to compare in the spring. In College Station, we did see a slight reduction by interseeding. You can see that the 100% winter wheat was statistically superior to the interseeding treatments at 75, 100, and 125 pounds per acre. Was not different at the 50 pounds. But the important thing is, yeah, there's a difference, but it was not nearly as substantial as the gain that we saw in the fall. And there's a little bit of noise in the data at Comanche, but I think by and large there was really no difference there to speak of, which is also a good thing. So that was the spring forage production. Looking at total forage production, I think this really kind of tells the story. You can see again, in everything except for the highest seeding rate, we were seeing a significant yields advantages with the interseeding scenario at both College Station and at Comanche. And it seemed to be fairly consistent. It looks to me like there's kind of a sweet spot here where it's most consistent between 75 and 100 pounds per acre. Sometimes at 50, it did better. Other times it wasn't significant. And also at the 125, sometimes was better, sometimes not. But it seemed to almost always improve yield somewhere between that 75 to 100 at both locations. So we took it another step further, and we wanted to see how it compared in our variety trials. So we did some blends, and I've highlighted those in red. So the 50% Haybet TAM204 blend is actually number one here. You see it topped the trial. Anything above the red line was statistically in the top yielding group. We tried some other blends to see how spring wheats and oats did, and they did not seem to make much of a difference. And also importantly, here's TAM204 all by itself, and it's down here kind of in the middle of the pack, and that's really what we should be comparing it to. So a big difference between the winter type all by itself versus the blend. So this was at College Station in 2015-16. We also did it in our variety trial at Comanche. And it really stood out in Comanche. It was in a group all by itself. So again, the treatment seemed to be very consistent. We're getting the same results every time. And again, the other blends that we tried with the spring wheat and the oat didn't really seem to make much of a difference. The other question that comes to mind is, what impact would this have on quality? Well, as you would expect, as we increase the biomass and that plant's going reproductive, we have more stem material, you would expect the fiber to go down or go up and the protein to go down. And in fact, that is what we saw as far as general trends in cut one. This is just looking at College Station. I don't have all the site years up here, but you can see not a statistical difference, but there was a general trend where the ADF, or the fiber, acid detergent fiber, did increase as our seeding or interseeding ratio increased. And also we saw a dramatic drop in our protein from about 31% down to about 24-25%. So we did take a hit on our protein. Not much difference if you look at the second cut, which was taken in late January, early February. Not much difference on fiber. Not a huge difference in protein. And interestingly, on our final cut in late March, our spring cut, we actually saw fiber drop a little bit with the higher ratio, but the protein seemed relatively unaffected. So in summary, the interseeding the spring barley really, in my opinion, this data is very convincing to me that we have a potential to increase our fall forage production without sacrificing much, if any, of our spring forage production. We do need to do a lot more information research on this as far as timing of grazing, because I don't expect that you would see a benefit if you went out there and grazed it after only 6 weeks, because you know, both the winter and the spring, until you get to about the FEEX 5 stage, there's really going to be no difference between the two. It's going to have to, you're going to have to wait long enough for the plant to get past that FEEX 5 stage to go into stem elongation and actually get that gain in yield. So I think you'd have to hold off a little bit longer before putting cattle on, but I still see the potential there. The other thing to look at, I think, if particularly, it's not a big deal as far as if you're going with a graze-only system, because it doesn't matter if the spring sticks around or not, because we don't have terribly hard winters. The question becomes, if you're doing a dual-purpose system, is that spring grain going to completely be grazed off, or is it going to try and hang on? Is it going to mess up your grain harvest in the springtime? So that's something else I think that we can and should look at in the future. So that is my talk. I guess I'm done a little early. But
you are. We have about 3 minutes, so we have plenty of time for questions.
Yes.
So you mentioned, I think you mentioned that in your ride and draw, you tried spring oats as well with the wheat.
It was a winter oat. It was just one of the commonly grown winter oats in the area.
Yeah, so I guess I would wonder what would happen with spring oats, but we have a number of producers that are playing around with that.
Mm-hmm. We did try this trial the first year. We actually did it with spring wheat, and I didn't show that data today because I thought I'd be running short on time, but we basically didn't see any differences with the spring wheat, and so I think it's not necessarily species-related, but maybe just a variety relation. This Haybet spring barley we used was specifically bred for forage production. The spring wheat we just randomly picked from some of our spring wheat trials from the area. So if you get a spring type that's specifically bred for forage, I don't see why it wouldn't work for oats. Moving forward this year, we actually have another trial very, very similar to this, but instead of doing it with wheat, we're going to interseed it with ryegrass, which in our variety trials, ryegrass actually, you get the most forage production out of it. So we're going to see if we can interseed it, or I know ryegrass is pretty weak in the fall, so perhaps this won't work with ryegrass if the spring type just outcompetes it and it can't get a good stand. But that's something we're going to be looking at this year. It does very well for us in Texas. Yeah. Gotcha. Yes. Well, I don't know, when you say double cropping, are you talking with like another forage system or with another grain?
Oh, sorry.
So
I think she means planting them together.
Okay. Right. The interseeding?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Them well, as far as environmental impacts go, I haven't really given that much thought. I don't know why it would have any different impact over a typical cool season, 100% winter wheat or any other cool season annual. That is possible. We didn't have any disease pressure on these trials. The hard red winter wheat that we use has got a pretty good disease package. Rusts are a big concern for us in Texas in our small grains. But we did not see any because of the varieties that we picked. Like I said, though, we didn't appear to have any pressure on the barley. Now, whether that was attributed to the fact that we interseeded it, or we just don't grow a lot of barley acres in Texas, so that might be another reason that we didn't see much disease pressure on it.
All right, thank you. We're going to have to keep moving. Let's take our speakers.